I'd like to call to order the November business session of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. As is our custom, we'll begin with public comment. I want to apologize to those who have traveled here for purposes of providing public commentary, but now is your opportunity to address the board, and I'd like to invite anyone to come up who does want to speak. Yes, sir.
Make this very brief on your behalf. My name is Jim Klein. I'm a resident of Fairfax County. I'm here to speak about the Route 29 corridor study, and I offer my comments as a national expert on context-sensitive design in transportation, as a landscape architect, and also as the author of the Journey Through Hallowed Ground corridor study that led to its designation as a national scenic byway last month. I'm also experienced in working on major highway projects through sensitive areas, such as Louisville's East End Highway Bridges Project through the National Historic District associated with the Country Estates there. I've prepared corridor plans for 9 different routes that link heritage tourism to transportation and touring through historic areas like us found in the Piedmont of Virginia. It's not just the Journey Through Hallowed Ground area, which is designated as a national heritage area, that I'm concerned about. It's also the entire Route 29 corridor from Lynchburg, Amherst to Charlottesville to Culpeper, that really relies on the historic and character and qualities of that spine for their quality of life and for economic development based on that heritage tourism. The Route 29 corridor study that you're now reviewing will have a significant impact on these communities. We hope that all those impacts are positive. The study that has been done so far and looked at briefly at the recent draft is great on transportation context, but where it really fails and lacks is on the description of the historic, scenic, and natural and community context that is the basis of that backbone of our Commonwealth. Traffic is not context. Existing roads and access management is not context. Without both community context and transportation context together, it's not going to be a successful effort. I want to make just 4 brief points on where I think the study should go as it moves forward. Perhaps it'll be used as an example for other corridors throughout the Commonwealth. One is that the vision statement that guides the corridor study needs to be broader. It needs to include both land use and transportation, as well as stewardship. The vision should be based on the community vision, mostly expressed in its comprehensive plans. That context, second, should also be represented in the maps and presentations that become the things that go forward as part of the plan. That should delineate at a minimum the areas that have been protected by as permanent open space and the areas where we plan for growth. And those areas include urban areas, there are transition areas, and then there are areas that are designed and planned to be rural over time. The third point is about the stronger link between transportation and land use that the study proposes and encourages. And that can't be done unless we begin to link those recommendations to urban portions of 29, transition areas of 29, and also to those rural areas. In the end, the fourth and final point is that the stronger language and examples that are given need more detail in terms of context-sensitive solutions that are part of those rural transition and urban areas, and tying those examples to those conditions, as well as other special situations such as battlefields and other historic hamlets and districts. I think what's really profound about the approach using the context-sensitive solutions approach is that it does not cost more. Instead, it's really about right-sizing the system to fit the community context. Money can be saved, the character of the community can be maintained, and the functional goals can all be met. I think your neighbors in Maryland, in Pennsylvania, up in New Jersey, are all looking at this right-sizing approach and coming to grips that that is the best way they can begin to match their resources while maintaining the critical qualities of their community. And so I thank you very much for the opportunity to submit these comments. I'll leave a longer version of these on your behalf with, I guess I did.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Klein. Really appreciate your time and traveling all the way to spend your time and thoughts with us. Yes, ma'am. Welcome.
Mr. Secretary, Mr. Commissioner, members of the board, my name is Ray Ely. I'm the president of Historic Green Springs and also one of the attorneys for Historic Green Springs. Historic Green Springs is a 501c3 organization that's been in operation for 40 years. And we operate the Green Springs National Historic Landmark District in the western end of Louisa County. And I've been following for many years the discussions about the problems on Route 29 and the talk about the bypass. And I will say that I don't remember appearing in front of some of you, but I have been appearing in front of various boards and commissions of VDOT for 20 or 30 years to talk about the problems about traffic and the issues in concerning the Green Springs Historic District. And because there's not always a lot of institutional memory with boards and agencies, I thought it would be a good time to come today and refresh those of you who remember Green Springs and those of you who don't about the location of the area, since there's been discussion lately about possibly using the Route 15 corridor as an alternate for an eastern bypass. For those of you who do not know where the Green Springs National Landmark is, it begins 2 miles north of Zion's Crossroads on Route 15 and continues for 6.5 miles along the Route 15 corridor. Green Springs was designated by the Secretary of the Interior as a National Historic Landmark in 1974, and the designation was ratified by an act of Congress a year later. It has the highest designation that's available to historic resources in America. It has the same designation as Monticello, Mount Vernon, and even the White House. It's an area of 14,000 acres in size, and 13,000 of those acres are under conservation easement. Most of those easements were put on the land more than 35 years ago, so as such, those easements are among the oldest in the Commonwealth. And the easements run, as I say, for about 6.5 miles along both sides of Route 15, and most of the easements are held by the Secretary of the Interior. When they were designed more than 35 years ago, they were designed to withstand taking by either the federal or the state government. The area is a unit of the National Park Service. And so it's important that folks, when you hear the idea of a bypass along that section of Route 15, this is between Zion's Crossroads and Boswell's Tavern, for those of you who know the area, that you recall that one of the oldest national landmarks and the largest rural landmark other than the King Ranch in Texas lies there in Louisa County. And by the way, I don't know if it would be appropriate to introduce it as part of these proceedings, but on your Virginia State tourist map, the Green Springs National Landmark is featured. I could hand it up, but I'm sure all of you have that map. Now, that is not to say that the section of Route 15 is not a death trap. There has been a lack of planning around the Zion's Crossroads area. And this is something I would like to call the attention of each of you to this problem. The Zion's Crossroads area, for those of you who not visited it recently in the last year, even 8 months, I would like for you to visit it. The Culpeper VDOT office laid out a bypass around Green Springs that I would like for you all to become familiar with. I suggest you revisit that bypass. That does exist. There's a traffic study that the local residents did. I would be glad to make that available to you. There may be some solutions there that some of you may not be available, but be familiar with. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ely, and thank you for coming all this way to share those thoughts and remind us of those important historic and cultural treasures that we protect, and I believe has been thoroughly recognized in the Route 29 study.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Benny Summerlin. I'm the county administrator in Henry County. Thank you so much for allowing me time to speak to you regarding the alignment of Interstate 73 in Henry County. This already has been a long and arduous journey, and as you know, we have a long way to go. Ultimately, however, we all want the same thing. We all want Interstate 73 to be built as efficiently as possible, to serve the most people as possible, and to have the most impact as possible on the localities through which it will travel, which was a key stated purpose of the I-73 legislation when Congress passed the legislation back in the 1990s. In 1997, this body authorized a location study for a portion of the Interstate 73 corridor from Roanoke, Virginia to the North Carolina line. In other words, right through Henry County. But a few things have changed in Henry County since 1997, just as they have in your lives. We estimate that we have lost more than 10,000 jobs since 1997, primarily due to decisions on the federal level that opened the exit ramps for our manufacturing base. What used to be made in Henry County by the good people of Henry County most likely is made in the Far East or in South America or in Southeast Asia. Locally, we are doing all we can to reshape ourselves. Henry County has purchased land for two new state-of-the-art business parks, nearly 2,000 acres in total, that are being marketed in such a way that will allow us to diversify our base. We're seeking funding to extend water and wastewater services to these new parcels. We're upgrading ancillary services such as broadband, natural gas, and electricity, too. We have done all of this within a backdrop of unemployment that is consistently in the high double digits, consistently the highest or among the highest in the state for several years now. We essentially were spared the bubble burst of the housing market because, sadly, we really had no bubble that could burst. It is essential that Interstate 73 be molded to meet the unique demands of our community. Our recently purchased business park sites would be better served by the suggested realignment of I-73 than the originally approved route. To alter the route at this point would not delay completion of the project because there's been no federal money designated for construction. Simply put, we have time to get it right. We need to get it right, because there will be no second chances once the shovels hit the dirt. Given all this, I ask on behalf of the Henry County Board of Supervisors that the Commonwealth Transportation Board reopen the NEPA process for this segment in Henry County to include the alternate route as endorsed by the Board of Supervisors. In closing, I want to express my sincere thanks to Dana Martin, the Salem District Representative on the Commonwealth Transportation Board, and to the staff of the Virginia Department of Transportation, but particularly Richard Kaywood, Lisa Hughes, our resident engineer, and all those working on the I-73 project. VDOT staff is extraordinary, and Mr. Martin's work on behalf of the CTB personifies what public service is all about. I thank you for your time, and on behalf of the citizens of Henry County, we would be grateful, appreciative of your support of our efforts to better align future I-73 with the county's future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Summerlin.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Champ Burnley. I'm president of the Virginia Bicycling Federation. I've already submitted written comments to the board on behalf of the Virginia Bicycling Federation regarding the Transportation Enhancement Fund allocation. But as a quick aside, on behalf of cyclists and certainly citizens across the Commonwealth, I did want to thank you all for your continued support of the Virginia Capitol Trail. And in the presentation this morning, I hope you all will choose to fund that. That is a great asset for the state, and we certainly appreciate that. Again, I'll try to be as brief as Mr. Hawthorne, but in summary, we certainly support the proposed changes for the TE allocation process. These are very tough economic times, certainly, and tough decisions need to be made, but we think that the current recommendation really is in the best interest of the Commonwealth, and we support that. I'll take just a second to remind the board that we suffer a health care crisis in the United States. Over 30% of our citizens suffer from obesity, diabetes, and heart disease, and many of these diseases can be related to sedentary lifestyles. So giving people core transportation functions for active transportation, to get out the bike and to walk, is very, very important. I mean, you all know about certainly global warming and CO2 emissions, and again, reducing our dependence on foreign oil and gasoline and getting people out of our cars is important. And finally, diminishing energy reserves is certainly going to be a crisis that we face in the future. To me, by identifying these core projects, by funding those and getting those in place is very, very important. It's certainly consistent with V-Trans 2025, where we talked about multimodalism. And that, believe me, I've sat through a lot of these V-Trans meetings, and I know that one solution we keep talking about is technology, technology, technology. I think we need to start preparing for the reality that at some point gasoline is going to be $10, $15, $20 a gallon, and we need to have alternate transportation, whether it be mass transit or, again, giving people safe alternatives so they can ride a bike or they can walk to work, to the grocery store, to their jobs. I'd be remiss if I didn't spend just a second and personally acknowledge, I know there's a lot of discussion about historic preservation, archaeological uses. There are a number of categories that are funded by the TE funds. I work with a lot of these organizations, and I commend them for their diligence and their hard work. But at the same time, we, with the Virginia Bicycling Federation, really feel that to focus on the core transportation functions really are in the best interest, and we support that move. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Champ. Yes, ma'am. How many more people are here to speak? One, two, three, four, five. Okay. We do have a very busy agenda, so I would ask again to be as brief as possible. Welcome.
Mr. Secretary, Mr. Commissioner, members of the Commonwealth Transportation Board, I'm Barbara Dirk from Roanoke, Virginia, and you've seen me before. I have invited you to come with me on the Virginia Cross State Bike Ride. That's 570 miles from Yorktown to Brakes Interstate Park and goes through 22 counties. Mr. Keene, Mr. Martin, Mr. Bowie know that how important it is to economic development in these areas. And I want to commend two of your district engineers, Rod Carey with the Lynchburg Construction District and Richard Kaywood with the Salem Construction District, and Michael Russell was here today with Salem, have asked their engineers to review and, if necessary, re-sign the route where signs are missing. For an automobile, if you have to detour, it's an inconvenience. For a bicycle, particularly if you're one of the international tourists coming through Virginia, if you have to have an 18-mile detour or get lost because there's no signs, it's a hardship. So low-hanging fruit, knowing how frugal that we are nowadays, if you can encourage the signing, complete signing through the 22 counties of the cross-state route according to MUTCD standards, I would appreciate that. The route was first signed in 76 and improved as a long-distance route in 1982. Healthy living, recreation, tourism, economic development, traffic congestion, and air quality are all part of this multimodal request. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dirks. Who's next, please? Welcome.
Good morning, and I'll be the briefest one of all. Bud Vibe from Henrico County, speaking on behalf of the Richmond Area Bicycling Association. I just want to tell the members of the board that our membership is 100% behind you in your change of policy on allocating the transportation enhancement funds in the new fashion, and we applaud that. We think it's a good idea, particularly in these times. I'll just add that having been down at the recent opening of the new segment of the Virginia Capitol Trail on the west side of Charles City County, it's a big hit, and keep that project going. Everybody down there and everyone around here thinks it's a tremendous project, and once it gets opened, it's going to be a tremendous tourism attraction. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Vine. Ma'am, welcome. Good to see you again.
Thank you. Good seeing you. I'm Leah Dempsey. I'm from Isle of Wight County, and I know that you were considering yesterday the transportation policy, enhancement grant policy, and you're talking about it again today. And I wanted to tell you from a county like Isle of Wight County how important that program is. In 1996, our Metropolitan Planning Office recommended a stretch or corridor for bike and pedestrian facilities in our county. At that time, there was planned development, and they thought that citizens then could make it into town and support those businesses. The understanding was that that funding would come out of the county coffers. So in 1996, we had a large lineup of folks from the southern end of the county who lived off dirt roads who talked against the county spending that funding for a bike and pedestrian facility. 10 years later, the citizenship in our county had changed quite a bit. We had a lot of folks from Northern Virginia come into the county and from Virginia Beach that were used to bicycle facilities, and they talked to the Board of Supervisors, and they created this bike and pedestrian committee that, of which I chair. That has been a very successful committee, very active. Thanks to you, we had a started a phased funding for that same four-mile corridor, and it has had rippled repercussions because of that. We recently created the planning and zoning staff, created bike specifications. Now all new developments in our county include bike and pedestrian facilities, and a private donor has funded a park facility that would be at the terminal end of that four-mile trail. So not just from a creating a trail, but for planning and design facilities and bringing the town and the county together, that enhancement grant program has really made a tremendous difference in our county as far as design and development, and I really support you for continuing to support that program in tough economic times. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dempsey. Good to see you again. Next speaker, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Alan Muchnick, a board member of the Virginia Bicycling Federation from Arlington, and my comments are my own and not necessarily endorsed by any organization. I strongly support all the proposed staff changes to the Transportation Enhancement Program. Virginia has enormous deficiencies in pedestrian and bicycle transportation facilities, and the proposed changes to the Transportation Enhancement Program should help address those deficiencies. That said, I hope that VDOT and the CTB will continue to do more to ensure that transportation enhancement funds are better directed to effectively and efficiently build pedestrian and bicycle facilities. First, the transportation enhancement project application evaluation criteria should be adjusted further to better prioritize projects that serve everyday transportation as opposed to trail projects that are primarily recreational in nature. In addition, the capacity and track record of project applicants to expeditiously implement transportation enhancement projects should be a significant factor in project selection. Second, the CTB should direct VDOT staff to publicize the application evaluation ratings to provide transparency, to give project applicants useful constructive feedback, and to encourage objective project selections. Third, ensure that the transportation enhancement funds are allocated in rough proportion to Virginia's population distribution. In the past, Virginia's urban cores and fast-growing suburbs in the Northern Virginia, Tidewater, and Richmond regions have generally been underrepresented in transportation enhancement awards, although the need for pedestrian and bicycle facilities is greatest in these regions. Finally, VDOT's bicycle and pedestrian program should have a larger and more direct role in proposing and implementing transportation enhancement projects that address priority pedestrian and bicycle transportation needs. We were especially pleased with how the CTB earlier this year allocated the transportation enhancement funds from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act to major priority trail projects around our Commonwealth. We hope that all future rounds of transportation enhancement funding will have a comparable impact in creating more and better facilities for walking and bicycling in Virginia. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Muchnick. Our next speaker. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commonwealth Board. Thank you for this opportunity to come talk to you about a very complex issue, the Route 29 corridor study. I will try to be brief as possible.
Could you identify yourself?
I'm sorry. My name is Dan Holmes. I'm with the Piedmont Environmental Council. I want to start by saying we were pleased to see the study's recognition of the link between transportation and land use, and we do not oppose further development of the study into a meaningful, responsible, fiscally efficient transportation document. However, we do not feel at this time that the study is ready to be moved forward by the board. With regards to linking transportation and land use, To efficiently allocate future transportation funding, the state should play a role in making sure that local comprehensive plans promote smart growth, and that growth areas, as designated in many localities, are appropriately sized. Many of these localities along the Route 29 corridor, the growth areas are entirely too large to generate the densities needed for cost-efficient transportation solutions. In 2008, the density for the city of Charlottesville was roughly 6 persons per acre. In comparison, the density of Arlington County was 12.4 persons per acre. In the counties of Fauquier, Culpeper, Madison, Greene, Albemarle, and the city of Charlottesville, all in the northern part of the corridor, there are approximately 105,000 acres designated for growth area as growth areas. According to the Virginia Employment Commission, this area is projected to gain roughly 110,000 people by 2030. If that projection is realistic, we're looking at approximately one new resident for every acre currently designated as a growth area. Even with the projected 2030 growth, the entire population of each of these counties could fit in within the currently designated growth areas, and not one would exceed the current density of the city of Charlottesville. This example illustrates that many communities along the corridor have adopted comprehensive plans that would not only permit but encourage sprawl. The reduction of the growth areas is critical to generating the nodal development patterns endorsed by this study. The Commonwealth has an obligation to all Virginians to assist localities in planning for and subsequently funding the needs of realistic population or projections on growth. In lieu of compelling a locality to comply with a particular plan, the state should bring all parties to the table and develop a range of likely growth and land use scenarios. These scenarios should be used working together with the stakeholders to develop solutions for efficient development patterns and transportation networks to meet expected demands. With regard to specific proposals, and I'm getting almost there, I promise. Chapter 5 of the study talked about recommendations for specific improvements in the corridor. Many locations, these were site-specific recommendations that were inconsistent with the study's stated policy goals. For example, new bypasses and highway sections to address regional traffic in lieu of creating street network are hardly consistent with the policy recommendations to support nodal and transit-oriented development patterns. Three very contentious proposals have currently, as it stands, been removed from the study. However, it remains unacceptable that in over a year spent developing the study, it is only in the past few weeks that many of the recommended improvements were made available for review and comment, and then with little or no technical information or traffic modeling to judge them by. Complicating this, the study lacked critical information necessary to allow stakeholders a meaningful review and analysis by providing no discussion of the fiscal magnitude of these proposals and the shortfalls in our budget. The CTB, we believe, would better serve the public by concentrating its efforts on solutions that have already been approved by the community and within their comprehensive plans than by seeking new authorities to strip local planning authority, as described in the current Chapter 6. Of utmost concern, I just wanted to raise that not only if it is required that localities incorporate some of these projects into their comprehensive plan, as suggested again in Chapter 6, not only might a locality be forced to accept an unwanted or unconnected project for their locality, but this would also bring an unwanted project that might be prioritized for funding and construction ahead of critical local projects. VDOT must work directly with localities to reach consensus on what improvements are necessary, acceptable, and what priority they should be implemented. Last on process, we just wanted to say this seemed to be a very rushed process. Dates of less than 2 to 3 weeks for reviewing major road proposals, again, without that critical information. We don't feel it was fair for the public. We also felt that many localities were strapped to even convene Planning Commission or Board of Supervisors meetings to review this project and actually come and speak to you as a county or make a statement with regard to what was going on in their locality. Thank you again for the opportunity to comment, and we hope that this study will move forward by, again, bringing together these stakeholders and looking at these local solutions.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. Mr. Pollard, anybody else wish to address the board after Mr. Pollard?
Thank you, Trip Pollard, the Land and Community Director of the Southern Environmental Law Center. I just wanted to touch very briefly, I know time is short here, but you received two very important studies yesterday, presentations on, and you're going to be asked to approve both of them in some form or another next month. First, Route 29 corridor study. I won't spend too much time on this because some of the points have been made by others and in your discussion yesterday. We've been actively engaged in this process of this study throughout. We've been working to promote transportation and land use solutions in the 29 corridor for over 20 years, and we will send you some additional information. I would like to, one, say we share some of the concerns you all expressed yesterday and that the last speaker expressed about some of the process that was followed here, the lack of the time to look at some of these options and some of the data, as well as the ability for the public and public officials necessarily to have adequate feedback. We understand the time has been short. This is an ambitious study. We think it's a move in the right direction to look at this type of corridor wide focus, but we are concerned about some of the process elements. We do urge you, as you go forward, as you look at this next month, though, to look very, very carefully with the lens of, given the analysis that is on the table, the analysis that was produced within this report, as well as the last two decades of studies and analysis of this corridor, and the need to focus on effective and cost-efficient solutions. I think Commissioner Eckern quite well articulated last night some of the proposals and some of the limitations of those proposals. Given limited funds, we've got to focus on what is effective and cost-efficient. I would also like to, though, endorse and urge you to strongly endorse a number of the corridor-wide component of this process, of this study. These were developed earlier on in the process, did receive quite a bit of public input and public and local input as well. So these, I think, are actually more reflective, have been vetted a bit more than some of the lines that appeared on the map. And we strongly endorse the overall approach. We think it's consistent with the direction this board has set, with the direction this governor has tried to set, with the direction that members of both parties in the General Assembly have tried to set to better link transportation and land use. The key recommendations we support, I will not go into them in any detail, but it's strengthening access management, building distributed network of local streets, constructing grade-separated interchanges to replace congested intersections, supporting alternatives to driving, and promoting transportation-efficient land use patterns, as well as your first speaker in the public comment today mentioned, preserving the environmental, historic, and scenic quality of this corridor. These are all bedrock principles that you all have tried, you know, to advance in a number of guises for a number of years. I think that this part of the study is absolutely rock solid for the most part, and we urge you to use this and endorse this and use this moving forward. Now I'd like to turn really briefly to the V-Trans, which is the other big study on the plate. This has improved considerably in very short time, and largely through the work of your subcommittee. I applaud the work that you all did. I think we've come a long way on that. And the other thing I think we've come a long way on is plugging, there was a bit of a gap on the transportation land use piece, which after the last couple of meetings, you all have heard some of the work, and again, the subcommittee helped to plug that gap. We believe that the V-Trans study does still have some shortcomings. Again, there's some process issues. The draft, for example, document still has not been released to the public, even though you all are supposed to approve it next month, so it doesn't give us much chance to offer you specific comments. Again, I would urge you, when you do review this next month, to focus on the efficient and cost-efficient projects and proposals. It is true for many of the projects and directions indicated in V-Trans, but not all of them. And I'd like to leave you with one final thought, and that is the need among the priorities to elevate environmental protection as one of the handful of priorities identified in V-Trans that should guide our transportation process. Both federal and state transportation policy recognize the importance of environmental protection. I've sent a letter to all of you about that and would be glad to provide further information, but I do think it needs to be elevated to be one of the handful of priorities to guide us going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pollard. Anybody else wish to address the board? If not, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved. So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item one, which is abandonments in several districts and discontinuances in several districts and transfers in one district. Is there a motion?
Motion for approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item two is to the commemorative, for a commemorative bridge naming of a segment of Route 199. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item three is repeal of frontage roads regulation. Is there a motion? We had a briefing on that last month.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item four is the approval of cooperative agreement between VDOT and the National Transportation Library. Again, we had a briefing on that last month. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Now, action item five is the transportation enhancement program. Mr. Estes is here to answer any questions. We had a briefing on this yesterday. We've heard public, extensive public comment. I was able to get to you about half of the emails I've received that were addressed to the entire CTB. Are there any recommended changes to the policy?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would like to propose that we add that section on scenic and historic easements as a continuing priority.
Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Is there any other amendments?
Move to adopt.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry, Mr. Coolmay, did you have a comment you want?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think it's all the list of the 12 is, each has its merits. I think adding another one dilutes our ability to address the others, and I'm going to vote no.
Do you want to vote no on the amendment and yes on the total package?
No. Yes. I wanted to be recorded no on the amendment.
Okay. Is that acceptable? Ms. Pandak.
Mr. Chairman, I'm very pleased with this, and I really want to thank Mr. Estes for the outreach he's done to secure the both public attention and comment to it.
Okay. And it's a unanimous vote on the final and one no vote on the amendment, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. The next item is the Virginia Byway designation in Dickinson County. Is there a motion?
Move to approval. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 7A in Albemarle County. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 7B in Halifax County.
Oh, I'm moving on behalf of my colleague from the Lynchburg District.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And action item 7C in Southampton County. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And action item 8, Scott County Recreational Access. Is there a motion?
Move approval. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And action item 9A, the town of Blacksburg. Are there any questions of Ms. Corder?
I move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 7B in Nottoway County. Are there any questions of Ms. Corder?
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 10 is the approval of the ERA Transit Capital Grant recommendations. This is the small urban and rural grants. You were briefed last month on this. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item on rail industrial access. Let's take these up individually. 11A in the city of Roanoke.
I move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 11B in Southampton County. Is there a motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 11C in Frederick County.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 12 is the technical support to high-speed rail. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 13.
Mr. Chairman, point of discussion, I'd like to suggest again that we make every effort to make our congressional delegation aware of the cooperation that has gone on between the states and the district.
Can you bring that up under new business, and it's probably the right place to do that? Okay. Action item 13 is the location approval for the Route 460 connector in Bristol.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 14 is the location approval for the Virginia Capitol Trail Sherwood Forest phase. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 15 is action on the bids. Is Mr. Coburn here? Mr. Coburn? Is this a good month or a bad month?
It's a good month. We have one revision for you, and the revision is the purpose and need. In additional detail on the project, we were able to get that process semi-automated fashion. The only change is the narrative, the purpose and need narrative that you see at the bottom. Just as a general status, if you will, we are still receiving 5 to 10 additional requests for pre-qualification from contractors. A number of those firms are out-of-state firms. As we have been experiencing for about the last 6 months or so. Excuse me. We only have, on the October the 28th, we received bids on 13 projects. Only one of those was over $2 million, and that's what we're presenting to you here today. This is a safety improvement project installing a new newly approved guardrail system, which is it's a high-tension cable system that can be located in an air median. This project is within a 10-mile area through the city of Harrisonburg. That section is one of the older sections of the interstate that has a 40-foot median from the painted edge line northbound, painted edge line southbound. It's a 64-foot centerline to centerline type of section. This is the first time we have deployed this design in Virginia, so it is the first project. We did receive 5 bidders. You'll notice there's only 4. One bidder was disqualified for an inappropriate or incomplete bid submission, if you will. The analysis of the bid is quite good, and we recommend its approval to you.
Mr. Chairman, I move.
All in favor?
Aye.
And you also did, you noted the other contracts that were approved by the commissioner, and you also were able to brief us on the stimulus project that was approved under the previous action by the board.
Yes, and I believe the chief engineer mentioned yesterday that which duck Road, excuse me, was authorized by the commissioner as your resolution of last month allowed on the 3rd of November, which saved at least 2 weeks in the implementation and beginning construction of that project. That was the only one that did come in. We were expecting another. One was delayed for clarity of information of issues raised by contractors.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Coburn. Any questions or comments, Mr. Schwartz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a request, Mr. Coburn. Could you circulate to us a picture of what that new guardrail looks like?
I certainly will.
Thank you.
That'd be great. I'm curious, too. Great question. Okay, we have a number of items under new business. Mr. Martin, did you want to talk about I-73?
Actually, I want to offer a motion. What I'll do is say what I'm trying to accomplish and get some help perhaps in the wording. But you know, in the spirit of my equal sincerity with what the staff prepared, what I want to do is ask the staff to prepare the draft for a motion in December at our December meeting requesting VDOT to work with FHWA to consider continue working with FHWA to consider the viability of Henry County's proposed alternative.
Okay. So that's simply a staff action. Would be very important for us to find a mechanism to communicate to the affected communities that the board will be considering this action item at its December meeting so that they know exactly what's before them. Okay. Without objection, I think we can proceed on that. Secondly, let's see. Did anybody want to bring up anything on Route 29 under new business? Ms. Panda.
Chairman, I apologize for not being able to be here yesterday, and this may have already been taken care of, but I would hope that there could be a direct communication to either the county administrator or city manager or the chairman of the governing body directly that will be acting next month so that they will know that.
On Route 29. Okay. And if I might make a suggestion, I think one of the things there was agreement on while there was a lot of focus on the Charlottesville bypass and some discussion about the Buckland bypass, probably 95% of the geographic area, there is consensus. Is there anyone who disagrees with that statement?
I think south of Charlottesville, everything's looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even some segments north of Charlottesville as well. But I think we need to focus on those. It'll help staff and just minimizing the amount of additional work. If you did not get a copy of the draft, there's a hard copy in large type format. Mr. Coolmay is holding up his. I would urge you to take a look at that, please. This is a very, very important issue. I do think it's important that we act at the December meeting. That action can take a number of forms. And, for example, you might want to say, those parts we all agree on, let's move forward. Let's prescribe a process for the areas where there are disagreements. That's a possibility to do something like that. We may want to just go ahead and act. Those are all before us. Mr. Davis.
The only question I had, I'm sure there's an established procedure for disposing of state properties like that right away, but I'd be interested in hearing how that's going to be processed.
Okay. And that's probably information that could be provided in advance of the meeting. Commissioner, if we could get that out by email to members.
Mr. Chairman, in the absence of our colleague, Mr. White, I wanted to just ask, he referred, and another speaker today referred to recommendations or exploration of possible solutions that had been proposed in the draft but actually were not included in the draft. I'm still a little confused about that process that either had them in or has them out, and wonder aloud and whether or not we should have access to what those were, at least some understanding of, was that a staff decision? Was that a the result of some kind of correspondence from somebody? In other words, there's obviously some controversy there. Do we need to know more about that before we proceed, or do we not need to know more about that before we proceed?
All knowledge is good. I'm sure that staff can provide you what those options were. They were up on a website for some a period of time, as well as the process to not proceed on those. I think that needs to be made available to the board in advance and can be getting that out to you by email.
Okay.
Any other questions on 29? B-Trans. Again, this will be a significant board action at the next meeting. Are there any requests about V-Trans? I think we had a pretty healthy discussion on that. Mr. Schwartz.
Yeah, I would just request, Mr. Chairman, that CTV members receive from staff as soon as possible full draft of all the chapters of V-Trans, so we have an opportunity to review it and to be able to provide, wording feedback, with a reasonable time frame before the next meeting.
Okay, and I don't see Mr. Davis here. My hope is that can get out early next week. I'm anxious to see it myself. We've dealt with it sort of chapter by chapter, and it's kind of hard to get our arms
right
around the totality of it.
We did a lot of work in our subcommittee, but we haven't seen the language of the chapters.
Okay. Okay. Lastly, there's a resolution at your place, which is an authorization for signature authority. If you're a reader of the Washington Post, you know that there is a significant amount of discussion about safety oversight of the Metro Rail system under federal law. That is a state responsibility. The unique aspect of Metro, as in all things in the metropolitan area, is a shared responsibility among Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. We are trying to figure out how to reconfigure that so that we can more effectively do our job as a safety overseer. I've had extensive conversations over the last month or so with Maryland, with the District of Columbia, with WMATA. It's a very challenging and difficult issue. I don't have an agreement before you. We need to act here in the next several days, and so this is an authorization to continue the oversight. There's a group called the Tri-State Oversight Committee. One of the criticisms has been it does not have any enforcement teeth, and so we will be adding some enforcement provisions. Maryland, Virginia, D.C. all do different business differently in that respect. We need to prescribe points of contact with Metro? Is it with the safety officer? Is it with the police chief? Is it with the general manager? Does the oversight committee have rulemaking authority? How far can they go? These are hard questions, but very, very important and substantial questions in light of the Metro crash this last July. And so if anyone would be willing to offer a motion to that effect, I know it would be greatly appreciated and help us in our negotiations.
Move we adopt the resolution.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Last item, just a note for those who are traveling west of here. There's apparently been very severe rains and potential flooding in the Charlottesville area. So if you're headed that way on 64, you may want to call ahead and just see what the road condition.
Drop pointed on being closed, sir.
Does anybody
have? We'd like a ferry.
The 29 canal system.
Mr. Lane.
No,
I'm sorry.
Reminding him, he wanted to bring up.
Is it my turn yet?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Under the, again, on the high-speed rail, we're looking at a very, very competitive situation with over $100 billion of requests for the $8 billion of stimulus money. As I said earlier, our congressional delegation seems to think there's not as much coordination between Virginia and our neighbor states as there ought to be. I would like for us to take some positive action. I don't know if it comes from this board or comes from this country, but to make, and maybe the governor, to make our delegation aware of the efforts to coordinate and cooperate with our area supporting state. This is very critical, this high-speed rail and getting the money to bring rail from Washington to Richmond, to Petersburg, to Mission Road is very critical to the economic vitality of this Commonwealth, and anything we can do to push that is most important. And I don't know if I need to make a motion or.
I think the message has been received, and that type of communication should either come from the governor's office or from mine. And we'll take that up, and that's a valuable piece of information. Okay. Any other items, Mr. Martin?
Do you want us to leave the 6-year plan binders behind?
Heck no, take it with you. I mean, you've got to vote on that next month as well. I mean, so there's a lot of substance there. One note of caution, there may yet be revised revenue estimates again. So, this is just the environment in which we live.
Mr. Chairman, in that regard, I would just note, I mean, the volume looks huge as if there are actually things that we can do. You might want to use red paper for those projects that are unfunded.
Be too easy.
Not that much red paper.
They want us to make sure we read it, I guess.
But I just say, because we were discussing perhaps in bits and pieces how it gives the impression that we actually have money. And so we walk around with this, and then you look at, in fact, there are a lot of zeros in there.
Well, in fairness, as much as and as rapidly as our revenues are shrinking, there are important bridge replacement projects like the Gilmanton Bridge and Hampton Roads or congestion relief like the hot lanes on the Beltway. We just recently cut the ribbon on some major bridges in Dr. Davis's district. So there are things that happen, and those are reflected in that book. I think one of the things that's happening, particularly in light of the stimulus, is the on-the-shelf projects are all gone. And if you look at and did an honest analysis of the 6-year program, and we don't, it's a very difficult analysis for staff to do, but how much of it is really maintenance? If you add up all the bridges and all the major pavement projects, technology replacement, which is in the construction document, really is more on the maintenance side of the house in the highway arena. Any other questions or issues? I want to appreciate, acknowledge, and thank you for your patience. There have been a lot of very important and substantial topics discussed yesterday and today. Our final meeting during the Kane administration will have a number of very significant action items before us. So please stay in touch. Talk to staff if you have questions so that we can advance those issues at our December meeting. Please travel safely. The meeting is adjourned.